is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. June 22nd marks the launch of the U.S. Bishops' annual Religious Freedom Week, a time set aside for Catholics to pray, reflect, and act to promote religious freedom in the United States and around the world. Joining us to talk about religious freedom is Aaron Weldon, Assistant Director for Religious Liberty at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington. Aaron holds a doctorate in theology from the Catholic University of America and is a parishioner of St. Francis de Sales in Washington, D.C. So, Aaron, thanks so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
Aaron, there are so many ways that religious liberty seems to be threatened these days. I'm thinking just here in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, over the last 15 years or so, we've had this ongoing legal challenge over this law that was passed in the city where pro-life pregnancy centers were required to put signage on their walls, things about what they covered and what they didn't cover. And The Archdiocese ultimately won that battle, but we've seen that in other cities as well. Could you talk about what's behind these kinds of struggles? Why are we seeing these kinds of challenges to religious freedom, do you think?
Well, I think certainly there's a great deal of political polarization in our country and this kind of a tendency, it seems like, to try to use political power sometimes to force religious groups to, in the case of the pro-life pregnancy center, they're being asked to speak messages that with which they don't agree. So I think that that's maybe part of it to some degree. I just was recently, you may be aware that the White House launched this Religious Liberty Advisory Commission, and they recently had their first hearing. And one of the themes that was coming up there was that although religious liberty often wins, as you just mentioned in the case that you dealt with, there's a saying that sometimes the process itself is a kind of a punishment. And because the religious liberty victories are not these kind of sweeping victories, they're sort of narrowly tailored to that particular case. Then even after a win, then you get another place, and you get the same type of issue where a state government or a local government tries to force a religious entity to do something that violates their faith. And so that's another thing that came up in this hearing that I thought that you hear a lot in the religious liberty community, this idea that even just the constant having to litigate these issues itself ends up being kind of a punishment in a way.
I saw that some states are trying to enact religious freedom laws. I think the governor of Idaho recently signed a religious freedom law in that state. Are you seeing more efforts in that area statewide, or is there any national effort to protect religious liberty?
Yeah, I mean, so the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, we really focus on federal issues, but I am generally aware that at the state level, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is a religious liberty law that for a while was seen as kind of unpopular. It was sort of tarred with the claim that it gave religious groups a license to discriminate. But I think over my understanding is that in the past 2 or 3 years, that Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA is what people call it for short, that RFRAs have come back at the state level. So it sounds like there's kind of more of a recognition that these are good laws. Basically, a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, It doesn't guarantee that the religious group or community or person making a religious liberty claim will win. But if they say that their religion is being burdened, then the government has to basically, this is sort of a quick summary of it, but basically, the government has to show that it has a good reason to be doing something that might burden the religion, and that the government is doing all it can. They call it least restrictive means, that the government is trying to burden their religion as little as possible. And if the government can't show that, then the religious person can win their case. And so it's not a license at all for anything, but it at least gives the religious group kind of their chance to make the case. And my understanding is that yes, at the state level, that there has been more of a push to get these passed and that they're being successful.
Where do conscience protection laws stand around the country? Could you first explain what conscience protection is as it relates to medical professionals, and where does that stand around the country?
Yeah, that's a great question because that ties into an issue that we're raising during Religious Freedom Week. And I'll talk about something that's very specific, if that's okay. So currently, if a medical professional, especially in the context of abortion, is put into a position where they have to participate in an abortion, or they can lose their job, they can make a complaint with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS for short, but they still really rely on HHS to enforce laws that say that their consciences can't be violated. One, a bill that we have supported in the past and that was fairly recently introduced, and I expect that here pretty soon we'll be saying more about this bill, but it's called the Conscience Protection Act. And really all it does is say that if a medical professional, a nurse, these cases seem to involve nurses. If a nurse gets coerced into having to participate in an abortion, violating her conscience, she knows or he knows that participating in abortion is wrong. But if he or she gets coerced into having to participate in some way, and if the HHS is not going to enforce their civil rights, then the medical professional would have a way to file a lawsuit. They call it a private right of action. Currently, they can't do that. And so that is a bill, the Conscience Protection Act, that we, the USCCB, it's usually my office is Religious Liberty. We work very closely with the pro-life, my colleagues just down the hall in pro-life. And we've supported that for a long time, conscience protection rights for medical professionals, primarily in the context of abortion. You're hearing more about it also in the context of having to being coerced into participating in gender transition procedures. Right now, the Conscience Protection Act that's been introduced already doesn't, it's just focused on abortion. But I know that this is something that people in the advocacy world talk about incorporating gender transition procedures as another thing that people should be able to conscientiously object to.
Where does that bill stand in Congress right now?
The CPA was just introduced recently in the Senate by Senator Lankford, and he's kind of been the leader on that. And then I'll have to look it up, but the companion bill in the House was introduced also. It's just been introduced, and so, like I said, we'll probably be putting more out on those bills. I would expect here in the next month or so, at the latest.
One of the things that Donald Trump promised when he was running for president, and even after he's been elected, he's been moving on this front, is to make IVF more accessible. He wants to make it free. He said he wants to make it free either through insurance or through outright government payments. Could you talk about that and how that affects religious freedom, especially for insurance, Catholic insurance, that we wouldn't want to cover that those sort of.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's so that's definitely an issue that we are monitoring. We identified that in our annual report, which we issued this past year in January, even before he was inaugurated. But yes, because President Trump, he campaigned on the issue. Just as you said, he did issue an executive order on expanding IVF, but it doesn't really say all that much. I mean, it directs the other agencies to come back with recommendations. As you probably know, there's been lots of rumors that any day now we're going to get the results of those directives, but nothing has come out yet, so we don't know exactly what it would look like. But I mean, certainly there's the possibility that it's something similar to the contraceptive mandate, as you're kind of alluding to. And yeah, it's sort of a funny, not, it's not funny in the sense of being humorous, but sort of strange that we're sort of coming back around to this issue, these notions of mandating coverage for things that people find objectionable. I mean, in terms of religious liberty, right now we don't really know. I think we do want to emphasize that we think expanding access to IVF is just bad in and of itself. There's a very good chance that religious groups maybe are going to get exemptions. And so, in that sense, maybe it doesn't end up burdening religious freedom per se. But that's why, again, this is another issue we work very closely with pro-life on, where we want to say IVF is still a violation of human dignity. It's really, it's hard, it's so bound up with abortion, because so many of the embryos ultimately are aborted. And so, yeah, there are other, there's a wide array of concerns with it all. And I think, it's, yeah, but it may end up being the case that it's not a too much of a religious liberty issue, in the sense of, if we say religious liberty involves being coerced to participate in things that we think are wrong, but we still want to highlight it as something that we're definitely concerned about and watching, and everybody's constantly checking to see if the next step has come out on the IVF mandate. So stay tuned on that one for sure.
For decades, the U.S. bishops have been promoting school choice. Can you talk about how that is a religious liberty issue and how does school choice related to religious freedom?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, when I first started as a staff person here at the Religious Liberty Office, and in those at that time when the Religious Liberty Committee was started, actually by the Archbishop of Baltimore, Archbishop Laurie was the chairman of the ad hoc committee, and it was really, as we kind of were talking about with the IVF, potential IVF mandate, it was connected mostly with the contraceptive mandate. There were a lot of concerns about things like sexual orientation, gender identity issues. But then it'd be interesting because when we would get a new chairman, school choice would be one of the first things that they would often want to talk about. And I think because historically it goes so deep, it goes back to the 19th century, when Catholics objected to basically being forced in the public schools to participate in like Protestant Bible readings and things like that. So it's this long-standing issue. And if you don't mind, I'll read a quote from Dignitatis Humanae that I think Dignitatis Humanae is the document from the Second Vatican Council that's really the guide to all our work on religious liberty. It's the Declaration on Religious Freedom. And so this is a quote from Dignitatis Humanae that I think is really helpful. It says, "Parents have the right to determine, in accordance with their own religious beliefs, the kind of religious education that their children are to receive. Government, in consequence, must acknowledge the right of parents to make a genuinely free choice of schools and of other means of education. And the use of this freedom of choice is not to be made a reason for imposing unjust burdens on parents, whether directly or indirectly. The rights of parents are violated if their children are forced to attend lessons or instructions which are not in agreement with their religious beliefs, or if a single system of education, from which all religious formation is excluded, is imposed upon all." So, I mean, that notion that parents forming their children in their faith is this fundamental or basic right that's connected with religious liberty. And then it's not just a matter of the government saying, well, we're going to allow you to have your own schools. Actually, the Catholic Church teaches that the government should make it easier, or help at least to facilitate the ability of people of faith to educate their children in accordance with their faith. So it's a long running, as you mentioned, for decades. It's one of the longest running religious liberty adjacent issues of all.
Our guest today is Aaron Weldon. He is the Assistant Director for Religious Liberty at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington. And we're talking today about religious liberty. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'm George Matisek. You're listening to Catholic Review Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Put our children on the right path, one that leads them to become intelligent, responsible, compassionate adults. That path begins with a Catholic education. Catholic schools inspire academic excellence with a balanced curriculum that integrates music, arts, world language, and Catholic faith, while challenging students in the areas of science, math, and technology. Help your child reach their full potential. Enroll in a Catholic school today.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Amid sweeping federal funding cuts to humanitarian programs, Archbishop William Laurie offered words of hope at a special Mass for the preservation of peace and justice, June 11th, at the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in Homeland. The Mass recognized agencies including Catholic Relief Services, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, and Catholic Charities, which have scaled back programs or laid off staff due to lost government support. In his homily, Archbishop Laurie criticized recent immigration raids and funding decisions that have, in his words, quote, frayed bonds of trust essential to our mission of mercy, end quote. He urged Catholics to continue advocating without fear and to show up for those in need. More than 400 people attended the liturgy. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. Sister Marcia Hall will soon be installed as the new Superior General of the Baltimore-based Oblate Sisters of Providence, the nation's oldest active Black Catholic religious order. Her leadership team will begin formal planning on June 25th at their mother house in Arbutus. A former educator and principal, Sister Marcia says the top priorities include attracting new vocations, promoting the cause of Foundress Mother Mary Lang, and improving the order's digital presence. With a median age of 83 and only one U.S. sister currently in formation, Sister Marcia says outreach is crucial, especially to younger women who may not even know religious life is an option. She's hopeful but realistic, noting that cultural misunderstandings and the desire for grandchildren often influence parents' views on vocations. Still, she says the order will continue to explain its mission and live out the gospel values that have sustained it for nearly two centuries. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld Tennessee's law banning gender transition procedures for minors, including puberty blockers and hormone treatments. Tennessee Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti praised the decision, calling it a win for parental concern and common sense. The decision is expected to strengthen similar laws across more than 25 states. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. For everyone at Catholic Review Media, I'm Kevin Parks.
Remember the spirit of your parish community, the power of worshiping together, the warmth of friends new and old who share your faith. Join us for Mass this weekend. Visit archbelt.org to find a Catholic parish near you. Feel the joy.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. With Religious Freedom Week kicking off June 22nd, we're talking about religious liberty with Aaron Weldon. Aaron is the Assistant Director for Religious Liberty at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington. Aaron, we talked in our last segment about how polarization is affecting our country, and you see it across the political landscape today. Americans and the church seems pretty bitterly divided. How do you see that affecting issues related to religious liberty?
Yeah, I can think of a couple of things, because you are right in bringing up the question that it's not directly a religious liberty question. But two things I would say on that. One is Catholics can't really, it's one thing if Catholics disagree with one another about issues. We're not talking about just having deep disagreement. You know, by polarization, we mean this kind of loyalty to one's tribe over seeking the truth of the matter. And so we can't really be effective witnesses to what political life should look like if we ourselves are polarized amongst ourselves. So that's one issue where I would say, because religious liberty issues are difficult issues oftentimes. And so that ability to respect each other is something we need to be able to bear witness to. So that's maybe one thing I would say to begin with. The other thing is that, you know, if let's say that I am loyal primarily to political party A, and party A says, we want to do this policy. And the bishops come out and say, well, this policy would burden the religious exercise of people. And if I, if I'm polarized as a, and like we're talking about more loyal to my political party, and I sort of just say, well, that policy is the right policy because my political party says so, and I'm not really open to that to the possibility of the way that this policy might be burdening religious exercise, it's a problem. It looks, because then it starts to look like religious liberty is just a pretext for other kinds of policies we want to promote, rather than the kind of fundamental right that the bishops are teaching that it is. So those are two sort of, it's not sort of a direct relationship to religious liberty all the time, but I do think that political polarization, if we're to be effective witnesses in the world to the truth, then, we have to at least be willing to, we cannot be just loyal to one political group. That's, I guess, what I would say on that.
As we mentioned, Religious Freedom Week kicks off June 22nd, which is the day that the show first airs. Could you tell us about what happens during Religious Freedom Week and what kinds of things go on?
Yeah, well, the main thing that we do is we provide a resource that I hope listeners will check out. And you can find those at usccb.org/Religious Freedom Week. No spaces or anything. And we provide the resources, as you mentioned, George, in the first segment, for prayer, reflection, and action. So for each day of the week, we have a different prayer intention and then a short reflection on the topic of that day is, and then some kind of action that people can take, that participants can take. And so that's sort of the cornerstone of what we do during Religious Freedom Week, is we call Catholics to kind of learn more about the issues, to pray. So we provide the prayer intention, but then also to take some kind of an action to promote religious liberty. And so for each day, for each different issue, we have a different action.
What can the average Catholic do to respond when he or she feels like his faith is being sidelined or challenged?
Yeah. Well, in terms of one's, In terms of one's personal faith and in their personal life, you know, I think it's important to not be afraid. I mean, part of what we're talking about is witnesses to hope, to believe that by continuing to speak the truth and to be a faithful witness to the gospel, even in the face of opposition, to be courageous. That we can change hearts on different kinds of issues. That might be one thing that I would say. In terms of just taking action on these political types of issues, we are very active in advocacy for religious liberty. And so if listeners want to go to our voter voice, you go to www.votervoice.net/USCCB. There are a number of action alerts where you don't have to do any work. We give you the language to use, but then there's also places where you can personalize the message. And then on different issues, you can tell Congress or whatever branch of government it happens to be at that for the different alerts, how they can protect religious liberty. One of the big things right now that we are pushing for Religious Freedom Week is a school choice bill. As you mentioned, George, earlier, as we were talking about school choice being a major issue in the Senate reconciliation bill right now, something people may have listened to a little bit in the budget reconciliation process. There is a school choice provision that would allow people to get tax credits when they donate to scholarship-granting organizations. I'm not going to go into all the technicalities of that, but it would, if it goes forward, it will open up the possibility of school choice to a lot of families. And so that's something we encourage people to take action on, and it's on our Action Alert Center if people want to go there.
Great. Well, our guest today has been Aaron Weldon. He's the Assistant Director for Religious Liberty at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington. Aaron, thanks so much again for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
For Catholic Review Radio, I'm George Matisek. Thanks for listening.
You're probably not getting much church news in your daily newspaper or on your local TV station. The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full-time. There are so many ways to stay in touch with the Catholic Review. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Get fresh news every day online at catholicreview.org. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice-weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Catholic Review Media will inspire, teach, inform, and engage you wherever your faith takes you. Read it today in print or online at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week. Available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM. Also, WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.